Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. This is Randy Legat, also known as Storm Trico on American Weather Radio. I have with me my two co-hosts, Ian and Matt. Say hi, Ian and Matt. Hello? Hello? Oh, sorry, guys. Hold on. We're having a little technical difficulties. Hello, anybody there?
Hello.
Yep.
Yep.
Okay.
Hello.
Sorry. Had a little technical difficulties there, guys. Okay, so we have on the line here Ian and Matt is my co-host. Say hi, guys.
Hello,
hey,
everyone.
Ian. Hey, Randy.
All right, and then we have Wes Junker. Wes, are you there?
I'm here.
And we have Scott. I don't know how to say your last name. What is it again?
No, Gara. That's okay.
Yeah, well, you know. And then we also have Will Schwartz. Will Schwartz from the New England area.
Well,
hi, everyone. Hello, everyone.
Patriot.
And the famous and the famous Dave Tollers from Richmond, Virginia. Say hi, Dave.
Hi, Dave.
Funny. All right, so we got tonight's radio show. We're going to talk about, of course, what's in the news, which you've all been hearing all day, all week. The big snowstorm that may be approaching and the trends in the weather models. We're going to start off with, a general discussion of today's models, maybe a summary. Dave, if you want to take it up and go first.
Is it me? Hang on a second. Yeah. There seemed to have been a general shift towards the European solution to some degree. A bigger shift with the ensembles, again. The thing that I've noticed about this over the last several days is that the operational GFS and the Canadian have been significantly different from the ensemble mean on almost every single run. That has struck me as really quite pronounced. And the European operational has been fairly close to the ensemble mean, and that's one of the reasons why, I mean, that strikes me significant about it. For me, when you're dealing with events, you know, 4, 5 days, 6 days out, 7 days out, it's all about the ensemble. And whenever I see an operational run which isn't matching the ensemble, I simply just toss it. I don't care what model it is. It's just that right now the European has been more consistent with its operational and its ensemble matching. So I've been tendency to go that way, but that's how I view it. So
Wes,
I'm coming from.
What about you?
Huh? Me? I don't think there's some differences, but they've really been clustered pretty damn close, the models. So, but the Europeans shifted south and the ensembles a little bit, but they're still big hits. The only people that are getting screwed are the guys up in the Northeast. There's going to be a really big snowstorm in the Mid-Atlantic states.
That leads me to the Northeast, New England. Will, Scott, what are your thoughts right now for that area, based on the model?
I've actually made a comment in the storm thread in the New England subforum. I made a comment that said, right now on the table, I could see 12 plus for all of New England, or I could see zero. How's that for narrowing the goalposts in 96 hours? that's essentially what's happened with the modeling today. It's the spread has actually increased on the solutions. Yesterday, we were looking at probably a pretty good hit across most of the solutions. Granted, it was, you know, 5-6 days out. On closer, we've now seen a divergence in model solutions. We've seen the ensembles. I mean, if the overall trend has been south, of course, but there's still a wide range of solutions. You see anything from 18 inches of snow in Boston and Worcester to nothing, to partly sunny skies. So right now, everything's on the table. The trend hasn't been very good. Right now, the European model is giving us a light snow event. The operational, the ensembles are a little bit more, maybe something like, you know, like a 3-6 type event. But we'll see. We'll see that that could come a little north, and that's a much bigger hit. You know, we look back at, you know, the some of the storms that this resembles. I was mentioning that the evolution of this storm, there's a few differences, but the evolution of this storm in my mind looks quite similar to the January 96 storm, the way the 500 millibar, everything develops. It, you know, there are some differences, but out of all the big ones, you know, like February 83, PD2, you know, even going back to February of 2010 and January 96, I feel like January 96 is probably the closest match out of all of them. And that one, of course, had a really, really sharp cutoff. And so did February 83 and the other ones, too. So New England snuck in to the heavy snow in February 83 and January 96, but they were left out in the February 2010 storm. And we also got into the heavy snow in President's Day 2 storm in 2003. So there's usually a very sharp cutoff somewhere, and we just haven't figured out exactly where that is yet. I wish I had a better answer. Maybe Scott could elaborate a little bit.
Yeah, no, we talked extensively on the board about all this. I think one of the key pieces to watch is the there's a little bit of a shortwave trough kind of coming through and right into northern New England. That's creating this area of confluence where it's really tough for any of this moisture to kind of make it north. It's, you know, it comes up to New Jersey and kind of slides east, and all the while it does, as the circulation kind of matures, it does try to send up the CCB into New England, but that little piece of vorticity, that thing kind of coming down from Hudson Bay, is really key in my opinion. I mean, you know, the ridge out west and how far it deepens and how much of the northern stream gets kind of infiltrated into the system is important too. But that little piece of conflict, that little shortwave trough there is, I think, really the key for us in terms of, you know, kind of opening the door up for a wall of heavy snow to come in, kind of like PD2 or 96, or otherwise just having it kind of go out to sea and we get, you know, maybe some leftover light snow is kind of coming off the water or something like that. So it's definitely one of those things, though, where we don't need a big shift. It's just, you know, get the height rises a little bit further to the northeast, you know, let's push this thing out, and you'll see that wall come right up. It's not going to take much. I mean, a deep, you know, a cutoff upper level low like that, dumbbelling through the mid-Atlantic, and all the while kind of wobbling and sending spokes of vorticity up to the north and east of it. I mean, that's not going to take much to get that into New England, but it's just a matter of getting that little annoying piece of vorticity right out of the way there, so we can kind of open the door for some moisture. But there's no doubt in my mind the Mid-Atlantic's in for a big storm. I mean, you can try to figure out the jackpot, but there's someone down there is going to get absolutely crushed. I mean, I don't see how every model, every ensemble has that. I don't see how you avoid that. It's just a matter of where.
Well, so since you guys live up there and you're objective, I want to ask you about the Mid-Atlantic down here. I mean, in your opinion, Will and Scott, if you had to narrow it down for a region right now that would get hit the hardest in the Mid-Atlantic, what would you say?
I would say probably the safest, like the quote safest zone, meaning the zone that's probably most afford to see the largest shift either north or south, is probably someplace like northern Virginia, into southeast Maryland. You have to be a little careful the further east you get, because if you get a too far of a shift, I know West knows this, but you get too far of a shift early in the development of the storm, you know, if it tracks a little inland on the secondary, you can introduce some precip type issues in the eastern areas. But, you know, probably like, you know, if you're far enough west, you know, northern Virginia, kind of like that Fredericksburg area, if that's, or is it Frederick? I get them mixed up.
Frederick,
yeah. That area of Virginia is probably kind of that would be my pick of the quote safest spot. But I certainly think right up through D.C., Baltimore, Philadelphia, down even into central Virginia, they're, all of those areas are prime spots. I mean, you know, some of the runs earlier today, especially the operational Euro, might have scared people north of Baltimore. You know, in my opinion, I feel like, you know, we'll see tonight, but I feel like maybe that was a little bit of a – that was pinching the precip shield a little bit tighter than even the ensemble. So, you know, I would not feel too bad if I was still in, you know, Philly, southern Pennsylvania, anywhere in Maryland. You know, the place you probably want to be a little more nervous is if you're north of Philadelphia and New York, and especially up into southern New England.
Yeah. Yeah, you got to love that high terrain, the east slope to the Appalachians there, and kind of Loudoun County or even west of there in that area, that's seeing that inflow bank up against those mountains, that's super impressive. I mean, someone in there is just going to get absolutely crushed in the high terrain of Virginia, I think, at least.
Yeah, let me speak to our local guys, Dave and Wes. Wes, same question. What do you think the most likely area to see the highest or be under the gun the most in this situation?
I think Northern Virginia, probably. Up to maybe somewhere between, I think, D.C. and Baltimore still, even though some of the models were trying to sharpen the cutoff on the north end. I can remember the 2005 February event. I was supposed to be in the absolute max, and it ended up being up towards Westminster. So I could see it in the last minute having a not necessarily a shift in the surface pat lower anything, but actually having some kind of banding feature set up on the northern fringes where people don't necessarily expect it to set up, and then still getting bombed. So I think there's a big area that's a threat, and somebody's going to get, you know, might get 30 inches, but the question is where. I don't know that answer.
Dave?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, it's pretty obvious that Richmond's going to see the most snow. Just kidding. Just want to say it. Just want to put that out there, everybody.
Well, I was just going to say, I thought the Euro was a little bit of a, I don't know, it's kind of like Will and
it is. My view is, in the Richmond area, it looks like, the trend is clearly for increasing amounts of snow. The last several runs of the Euro Ensemble down here have consistently showed 12 inches, the last three runs, as a mean. I went to, go to the Weatherbell site, you can look at the plumes there on the bars there on the European Ensemble for the snow mounts. And, the max is 20, it's been 20 or 22. So you're seeing that good range in there, and that's a fairly consistent range. I could see it being 12, I could see it being 18 or 19 or 20 and placing the top two, three snows in Richmond if everything worked out right. I can see anything in between. For my area, I think the best snow, I think, Charlottesville looks really great. The Blue Ridge looks awesome. The entire Shenandoah Valley, from Roanoke to up towards right up to in the up to the mountains, what's the Catawba, any mountains there, one in Maryland, by Gettysburg, and even into Hagerstown. I don't think it'll go as far as Gettysburg, but into Hagerstown or Frederick, that whole Shenandoah Valley looks really good to me.
Yeah.
If the slide east continues, it might be from the Shenandoah eastward, the far eastern counties of West Virginia, instead of being in that 18 to 24 band, might be back in the 12 to 18. So that's my view for it. So, in Richmond, I think the trend is increasing. I'm hoping that the NWS forecast here catch up, but they still have an awful lot of rain in the forecast, and I don't understand that. My 850 temperature on Friday evening is -4, and they're talking about a mixture changing over to rain in Richmond. I'm like, all right, whatever, fine. So
it looks like Richmond. Where you at, Dave? At the very least, you're gonna get nailed with a warm conveyor belt at the front end of that, regardless. Even if you do mix, I don't see how that's. Or your knee's not going to get slammed by that. Given at this point. It's a wraparound, but.
Yesterday they had all rain. Now they're going 2 to 4 and then rain. I'm like, okay, whatever, great. It's really 2 to 4? Really? You really want to go that much? I'm like, okay, good. When you're in a jinx place like Richmond, as long as you have it, it has a tendency of making you cynical and skeptical, and I understand that. But anyway, that's how I see it. For mostly, it looks like the Shenandoah Valley Piedmont storm off to D.C.
Yeah, I have some concerns for where I live in the eastern from Washington east that we still could mix. That if things shift just a little bit west, that some level they'll be with a roaring east winds. That there may be a warm layer. Come in, and then we could mix with sleet for a while. That happened in '96, which a lot of people are saying that's an analog. So that's a concern to me.
Hey, guys, I have a question. This is Ian. It seems like there's been a difference between where the GFS and the Euro have sort of had the coastal take over fully. I think the Euro has been consistently getting fully on the coast quite a bit earlier, maybe down like in the South Carolina, maybe, whereas the GFS, it seems like the low doesn't fully take over on the coastal around North Carolina. Is there a difference for the storm in either the mid-Atlantic or further north, depending on where the coastal fully takes over? Which is better, I guess?
Depends on the track, I think.
From what I can see, I mean, you want the coastal to take over the sooner the better. You know, and it doesn't, you know, if there's some difference. I mean, if the coastal goes, let's say, over Hatteras or south of Hatteras, that's probably better for Richmond and not as great for D.C. or Baltimore. If it goes between Hatteras and, let's say, Elizabeth City, that's great for everybody. And if the coastal, let's say, tracks over Elizabeth City or then, say, goes into Chesapeake or Virginia Beach, that's great for D.C. That's not as great for Richmond.
I agree, disagree. If it goes over the Chesapeake Bay, we'll change.
No, I said between between
even Delmarva will change.
Right. No, I agree. If it goes over the Delmarva, that's what I'm saying. Right. So the European solutions are generally south of that. And yesterday's GFS, which had a lot of rain, definitely was taking it out. You could see the low light west going over Salisbury. And that's too far north. That screws DC, screws Richmond, and that's, I agree with that. But suppose the track's between, let's say, Elizabeth City and Hatteras. And then
that's
you have
a good
like
track.
Yeah, that's a great track for DC.
It's a great track.
That's a great track. There you go. So, you know, if it's south of Hatteras, then it's more better track for Richmond and not as great for D.C. So that's how I see it.
Cool. I mean, I guess I was sort of thinking a little bit more just like I guess maybe it seems like the Euro develops – like the low actually initially develops further south on the Euro. It sort of seemed like maybe that helped kick the front end up a bit. Like there's a lot more precip on the front end on the lows that start further south, it seemed like. I guess that's sort of what I was thinking, but maybe I imagined it.
Well, when you get a more mature low down in, say, like Georgia or South Carolina, you're going to start developing the conveyor belt sooner. So as that thing starts to track up on, it's going to rip all this moisture up on the south and southeast side of it and start shoving it north. And that's the warm conveyor belt. And then as it starts to mature more, you get a cold conveyor belt, and that's the nice calm ahead on the backside. But that initial precip on the front is going to be your warm conveyor belt. So if you have kind of a primary that's kind of stuck back in Tennessee and the thing hasn't really developed yet along the coastline, that's when you get, everyone calls it the precip hole, you know, like is it the Appalachian precip hole? All the D.C. people get scared of that in like a Miller B. It kind of jumps over them because there's really no warm conveyor belt, you know, formed yet from the coastal. It's kind of, you get this area of precip back in the Ohio Valley, and then you have another area of precip when the coastal is going late. You see it out over the water. You don't see it out, you know, it doesn't hit DC. It skips over. And so that's why the southern track is better, and that's why probably, Ian, that you're seeing, you see the juicier solutions on the front end when you have the low starting to develop sooner down in Georgia. You get the warm conveyor belt that's just grabbing all this moisture from the Gulf, and it's shoving right back north over the cold dome, and you get it. You get a ton of precip that way. And then as it matures, you also get in on the cold conveyor belt, and that's the area of that jackpot when you get both of them. You get both the warm conveyor belt and the cold conveyor belt at their max, you know, that sweet spot. And that's those are the spots that are going to see, you know, probably 2 feet or 20 inches or more in this storm. And we just don't know exactly where it is yet, but, you know, somewhere down there.
Hey, well, probably right now, 50 on the Euro for Richmond and that part of Virginia. I mean, that warm tongue, that area just knifing into southeast Virginia. I mean, that's just classic data E trowel look right into that area there. I mean, I was looking at that yesterday too. That was more pronounced, kind of more DC, you know, a little bit further to the north, and it was just like, damn, it's really impressive from a meteorological standpoint to see that. I mean, that's just beautiful, right? Someone just right on the nose of that's going to get absolutely nailed. That's so cool to see.
Yeah,
Hey guys, right now the it's the only data we have now, so forgive me for saying this, but the NAM is coming out. And I don't know if anybody had a chance to look at it.
No, it'll give people heart attacks.
I see it now, yeah.
It's north. It's north.
People are asking about it. If somebody wants to take a look at it and give me their analysis on the newest run of the NAM that just came out, take a stab at it.
I didn't really look at it closely, but I'll just say for New England area, that's actually a trend you want to see. If you notice when you – I was comparing just a minute ago the 78-hour – this is pretty – I mean, I know we're talking about the NAM, so this is pretty pathetic in its own right, but I was comparing the 78-hour 18Z NAM – or the 84-hour 18Z NAM with the 78-hour 0Z, and you notice that the heights over Maine, northern New England, the heights are higher on the 0Z run. The confluence is less, and that's actually a trend that we would want to see if we want to get the heavy snow up into New England instead of having it come up to about, you know – Philadelphia, maybe New York, and then kind of start to slide east. We want to see that confluence a little less to sneak that heavier snow up into southern New England. I didn't really analyze it very closely for the Mid-Atlantic because I was actually only looking at 500 millibars. I haven't even looked up at 850 or the surface yet.
Well, for DC, it wouldn't be too good.
Is it a little warm?
Yeah, it's a little warm, but
yeah,
it's a little warm, but we still get a lot of snow.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's also – the people west of the city do fine, but it actually has a low going right over the bay on the one at the Storm Vista one at 84 hours.
Right.
So that would mean D.C. would even change – might even change the rain for a while. And then I think it would go back to snow because the 500 low is so far south that eventually you'll get into the deformation zone. But it'd be a period where you'd see snow on the front end, some rain, and then probably snow on the back end.
It's kind of a classic NAM-like solution. It just kind of develops the low right along the coastal front end in Hatteras and almost rips it back northwest a little bit. I mean, it's you see the NAM do that all the time. It loves to tuck lows further to the north and west. But
is that a common error, or is that Scott, in your experience, does that happen in actuality, or is that something the NAM just does?
I think it's just the way the physics are in the NAM when it comes to coastal cyclogenesis. That you know, it tends to sometimes. I mean, I'm not saying that's you know, who knows, maybe it is right. But I mean, might just based on experience, and I'm sure Will can attest to that. You know, it really tends to overdo convection and just turn these things into latent heat bombs and really.
The NAM is a non-hydrostatic. The NAM is a non-hydrostatic model. So
yeah,
the non-hydrostatic models will sometimes go ape bleep with the convection, and it will tend to overdevelop loads. Sometimes they're right. I mean, there's been cases where it's correct, but you generally need something really, really. You usually want like a really, really strong Vortmax, tight Vortmax, with a lot of convection on the east side, and that's when the NAM will tend to do better. I don't know if it would do better in this setup because it's such a larger upper level low. I mean, it could be having a spurious reaction to one of the vort lobes out on the east side.
Well, that's what it looks like it's doing. It ends up having a monster rainfall max over eastern North Carolina and then rotates it northward, and that's where the low goes.
Yeah. I would get nervous with these setups, you know, with Miller A type setups with the NAM, especially when it's convection involved. I don't know. I would definitely take some of the solutions with a grain of salt going forward, especially you know, beyond 48 hours out. So
developing the 500 like that, and then you know lifting into Kentucky by 72 and 84 hours is significantly different from what the other models were showing over the last 24 hours. So it kind of reminds me of the solutions that the models were showing a couple of days ago. With a 500 low over Kentucky, Ohio, or Indiana, something like that. So I'm a little, you know, I'm not surprised by the NAM by that, but it doesn't, right now it doesn't particularly bother me. If I see something else do that as well, I might be a little concerned. But right now, at 84 hours of NAM, whatever.
Yeah, I made a joke earlier in the New England thread about on the Penn State site looking at the DJX, and I was like, you know, it's probably just look at that solution and when the NAM gets into that range, it's probably going to do that. Take a low and pull a Sandy and rip it into the Delmarva like it did on the 6Z run this morning or whatever it was. That was kind of funny. So.
I'm sure we're going to see some of those, trust me. They're coming.
Yeah, I think everyone's here for them to not take the NAM too seriously at this range especially. So nobody should be freaking out about any NAM run over the next 36 hours. Yeah.
500 looks okay at 84. It actually has the 500 low center, like, way down there in South Carolina, Western North Carolina. The surface looks stupid, but the 500 millibar looks
fine. That's why I was saying it would, even if it were somehow to surface verify, which is pretty doubtful, we'd still get a lot of snow once that upper low drove east. We'd get in the deformation zone, so it's
interesting how it takes the 500 low to Kentucky or Tennessee at like 72 hours, then it drops to southeast.
I have a question for Wes.
How it does that?
Wes, have you seen in all your years? This is pretty interesting. Some of these model outputs. Have you seen a 500 millibar low this massive and developed that goes this far south of DC? I don't think I've seen one like this in the winter time. At least, I mean, the closest might be January 96 for a time.
I think that's the closest I can think of.
I don't remember seeing one this huge and deep that's still developing that goes well south of DC. That's amazing to me, and that's probably one reason why someone's going to get nailed there. You don't know the exact jackpot, but someone's going to get crushed because of that.
Yeah,
that's interesting. You know, it seems. I'm wondering. I mean, if that's that's what makes it unusual is the 500 that far south, because that's one of the reasons why you don't see these big giant snowstorms in Central Virginia that much. We get screwed for the Miller Bees with the lack of warm conveyor, but you don't see the 500 lows dropping like that far south and bombing out like that. It's kind of unusual. You do see them coming up from, let's say, from Atlanta or from let's say southern Georgia, and they pass over Hatteras, and the North Carolina ends up getting more snow than Richmond does. But to see one do something like that consistently, like the Europeans been showing in the European ensemble, it's kind of unusual. That's I admit that it is unusual.
Yeah.
And not common.
Scott and Will, this is Matt. I have a quick question for you all. You were talking about the models before and whether they'd come north for southern New England and about some past storms. And you mentioned January 96, and I forget the second one you mentioned. I think it was PD2. My question is, how well did you all do in December 19th, 2009? And what did the Euro and other models look like 72 hours out?
Gosh.
The Euro. The Euro was – all of the models were suppressed too much. Up till around 72 hours, they jumped west.
Yeah. It came north, and we eventually – the models eventually had us into – most of southern New England was in the heavy snow on the models right before December 09. But then at the very last second, there was actually a tick southeast for us. And it basically took north of the Pike, the Mass Pike, and especially northwest out of the equation. I think in the end, Boston managed to get to, I want to say, 11 inches in that storm. Worcester off to the west, even though it was the same latitude or a little lower latitude, we only got about 7 inches, I think, in that. A lot of very dry air was draining in from the north, and Hartford, I think, got 2 inches. Despite being southwest, there was terrible dry air coming in from the north-northwest. And then the southeast Mass, Rhode Island, and southeast Connecticut got hit very hard in that storm. Yeah. They got, 15 to 20 inches. I think even southeast Connecticut got 2 feet in some spots. But that storm was definitely different than PD2 in January 96. The latter two storms I just mentioned came significant. They enveloped all of southern New England in heavy snow. Pretty much the entire, all three states, Mass, Rhode Island, Connecticut, all got over 12 inches in each of them. And in the case of President's Day, too, most of the area got over 18 inches. In January 96, probably at least half of the region did. So it was, those two were much, much more significant storms than December 09 in southern New England. I think the most similar setup is January 96, but that doesn't mean we're going to get the same snow because we're in such a – January 96 had a tight cutoff, and you could shift that 50 or 75 miles easy and we'd be in a lot different situation.
Yeah.
We'd get almost nothing.
Now, were you referring to the December 1920, 2009 storm?
Yes, that's what I was.
Yeah, because I think the models were suppressed, like Wes said, like maybe 4 days out, and then they moved north. Obviously, they
I have the model data
north from that to New England. Yeah,
I have the model data from that saved, so I'm looking at it now. And
I think it's 72 hours a Euro jumped north, and it was the first model to jump north, if I remember right.
Yeah, it was.
I think it was like 40 hours before that.
At the time, I thought it was going to stay south because, and the reason I thought it was going to stay south was because there was, if you look at the upper air maps, I mean, at the plot, there was an enormous 500 low over Newfoundland or Newfoundland, depending on how you want to pronounce it. And it was a huge upper low that just sat there, and I thought it was going to, the southern shortwave, the system was going to stay south. And then it did jump at the last second, you know, 72 hours. So I originally had, like, you know, the another 10 to 20 inch band. I actually had that through almost running west to east from Salisbury to Charlottesville to to Richmond, and then it jumped north, and we ended up getting like 8-9 inches here, and then we went over to Sleet, and then all the huge snow was north and west of Richmond and the Piedmont up to D.C. and Philly and so on and so forth. So it did jump like that. Yeah, that's true. It did.
Yeah, I think that's the one cautionary note is with all of these kinds of storms, it's really important what happens up north. In where the confluence is, if you in that particular storm, what really hurt you, Dave, was that massive upper low that was up there moved out a little bit and relaxed just enough to put the confluence zone further north, which let the storm come further north.
And the reason why I did that, Wes, is because I live in Richmond. I just want you to know.
but that's a cautionary note even for this one.
I think the one thing to watch, too, is, you know, especially further off to the north, and I don't – perhaps it doesn't develop quite like we saw in 2009 and 2010 because of the way the confluence was in northern New England, but the northern edge, those deformation bands, I mean, we – all those storms you mentioned, 96, PV2 in a way, but December 2009 – and even in 2010, the band that just crushed the Baltimore area is going to be – those all had classic northern edge deformation bands. I would think this one probably will, too, to a point, but, you know, it's definitely something to watch. I was kind of looking at 700 just on the AT&T GFS, and that banding signature is really something near and just north of D.C., and then eventually kind of pinwheels down into them, but, I mean, just – kind of looking at that and looking at, you know, eyeball and the funnel genesis areas, and just that even in Philly, I mean, on the
Wes mentioned earlier that when he was talking about the Mid-Atlantic, saying that watch the northern precip shield. It's not necessarily that the surface low changes, but the models may not correctly identify that northern edge of frontal genesis banding. You see it all the time. Remember, we were all talking about remember even before the storm, we were all talking about the band Philly might get in February 5th, 2010.
Yeah.
You know, the max QPF on the models was south of them, but we were saying they were right in the crosshairs on that frontal genesis, and I think, you know, they ended up getting that ridiculous band right through Philly and right around there.
Definitely watch for those. I mean, never mind what the lift shows verbatim, just watch for those features, those backbend warm fronts, right? Anybody that's kind of looking at 700 millibars, you know, those little kinks and the isobars that you see kind of extending off to the northeast.
February 83 had one of those, too. It was up in... Even up in New England, February 83, there was a big band that made it up from about northeast Mass back to Hartford. I think we had
thunder snow on that, too,
I think Bradley Airport in Hartford got 21 inches in February of 83, even though clearly the best of the storm was further southwest. But
that also had a gravity wave.
Yeah.
It went all the way up, and there was convection with that.
I think it hit Allentown too.
Yeah,
Allentown got the gravity. Allentown got like 26 inches or something, or 25 inches. I remember from reading about it. But you always have to watch for those bands. And I know January '96 had a huge deformation band out in Western Mass. You know, it was actually way. It was literally within probably 25 to 30 miles of where the cutoff zone was for getting any snow at all. They got something like 26 inches, and then literally 30 miles away got a trace. It was right on the edge there. So you have to watch for those sometimes. I mean, it's not fun to have to be on the edge, but sometimes that's where the heaviest bands can be. and you know, especially up where we are, that's what we have to watch for. If the storm makes that far north, of course.
Hey guys, it's Randy. I got a question that's on a lot of people's mind. The models, to various degree, have been saying an early start time to a late start time. I mean, what do you guys believe the start times for this storm will be? I mean, the Euro had it as late as, I think, Matt, you said it was, what, 5 p.m. on Friday?
Somewhere mid-late afternoon, yeah.
And the GFS was early in the morning.
The GFS starts us, I think, generally around 8, 9 a.m., somewhere in that range. So okay. The Euro was a big delay. It kind of hits the wall. And then finally it just, like, moves in like crazy, but it hits a wall for a little bit where the GFS kind of approaches and, like, jumps right at us, like, no resistance. So it's a little bit different in timing.
So, Wes, in these situations, I mean, in from past experience and, you know, from what you're looking at now, what would you guesstimate the start time to be for this system on Friday?
I'd compromise because I'm a coward. but it used to be that we used to always go with faster back in the olden days. But I don't think that's necessarily true anymore. That the warm advection, if it was a different kind of warm advection with no big sharp ridge, then it might spread in really fast. But there's going to be a lot of dry air it's going to have to overcome. So I kind of think the GFS is too fast. But it still may not be as delayed as the Euro. So I'd probably wait until the afternoon on Friday, but that's just a guess.
Yeah, I have it in Richmond around, somewhere between like 9, 10 a.m. Richmond to Charlottesville around 9, 10 a.m., maybe 11. And then getting up to D.C. by sunset, maybe between 3 and 5, something like that. That's how generally. That's what I'm thinking. So
3 to 5 p.m. in the D.C. area, and Wes, you're thinking afternoon as well.
Yeah, I don't know when in the afternoon, but I think probably just based on what both the European ensemble mean and the European have, I think it's going to tend to be at least mid afternoon.
Okay.
Yeah, I was going to say midday, maybe early afternoon, if the Euro ticks north again. I think three to five is a little bit late. But DT could be right. It could be that late. I think it'll be earlier.
Three to 5 p.m. seems a little late from what I've been looking at, but I mean, I don't know why, but for some reason I like a 1 p.m. start, maybe, at the latest.
Well, when you say start, are you talking like just flurries where you have to stare out at the trees and say, wait a second, is that a flurry or is that a fly? What are you talking about?
No, I mean,
I'm just saying.
Yeah, first flakes maybe around 11.
Okay.
Seems like a good forecast right now, but that could change, obviously.
Yeah, I on a personal note, I have a friend who's bugging the hell out of me about traveling, and she thinks she's getting out of town at 1 o'clock on Friday, and I'm telling her, probably not. So, you know, I'm trying to be as accurate and nail this down to the wire as I can for her. But anyway, thundersnow. I heard somebody mention that earlier. Wes, this seems to be your thing. How are your feelings on thundersnow for this?
To be honest
storm?
With you, I haven't even looked yet. I haven't looked at the soundings. certainly, with that strong of, I wouldn't be surprised with such a strong system that you a lot of times get it. But where it probably won't be everywhere if we do get it. But I'd like to look at the soundings actually to see.
All right, and maybe while you do that, Dave, what do you think about that possibility? I don't know if you've been looking at soundings closely or not.
Yeah, I actually have been, and the 12Z was, I'm not sure about it. The 18Z seemed more dynamic to me, a little better. I wish I could see a European sounding, but the Europeans that hide those things, little monsters. Definitely. I think that's a real possibility. at the height of the event, which I'm not sure if, I mean, if it's going to happen, I would think it probably happen Saturday morning. That seems to be the height of the event to me. I'm not thinking Friday. I'm thinking more Saturday morning, but that's what it looks like to me, if it's going to happen.
Okay. What about you guys up north? I don't know if you guys looked at the soundings. I mean, for down here in this area at the height of the storm, Scott or Will.
I have not, personally.
Actually, the one when it looks the best is, at least for, I got to figure out where my sounding is, so it's pretty close to D.C. There's no real unstable layer, but there is a very deep layer right along the Moist Adiabat at 18C on Saturday. It's funny because the sounding actually shows at 90 hours shows sort of almost a dry slot look. It's moist up to 700, and then there's some drying up above. And that, a lot of times when you get close to some kind of mid-level dry slot comes in, that you do somebody nearby that's usually just a little bit north of that can sometimes get in an unstable layer. So,
and just for people.
So I think Dave's right. I think it's sort of, if it happens, it's going to happen on Saturday and probably Saturday morning.
That leads to my other question. What for D.C., and I'll get down to you, Dave, for Richmond. But Wes, for D.C., the heaviest snow or slash the worst of the storm for just the general public listening, what time frame do you see for that?
Well, it'll be whenever the deformation zone sets up. I think that's when it will look like the world's coming to an end, if it ever gets that way.
Okay.
So I...
That's more Saturday
certainly,
morning, right?
Huh? That would be Saturday morning. Though you look at I've got the wrong model up.
Dave, for your area down there,
and that
you
is it looks like Saturday's the big time frame where the really heaviest stuff is, the Saturday morning.
Yeah, Saturday morning on the Euro is destruction for Northern Virginia, the northwest
right.
suburbs. So I think people who are worried about that cutoff, you know, that sharp cutoff kind of 50 miles northwest of D.C., one, I don't think it's going to be there anymore once we see a few more runs, and two, It's just standard that banding is going to happen out there. Wes mentioned and the others mentioned that you get a secondary QPF max. You get secondary banding. And I think we've all seen it. We know that band set up in kind of the typical areas in these kind of storms. So, yeah, and even the Euro catches on to it. So you all in Winchester who are getting a little nervous in Martinsburg, you're going to be fine, I think, unless there's some wholesale change. That's going to be a place that's going to get rocked.
Actually,
I have a
I was looking at it as, getting back to your
ahead,
thundersnow
sorry.
Comment, if you guys look at the sounding Saturday morning, let's see, say, I can't think of any KOs offhand, but somewhere in the Eastern Shore, kind of Delaware area there, it looks like it's, I'm just kind of on twisted data here, so you can kind of drop a little in here and see what's going on, but the sound is really above 700. There is a dry layer, it looks like right just near or maybe down or about 650 millibars on up, but you can see it has that classic fallback on the sounding. It's you know, conditionally unstable. You see it's a little bit to the left of the Moist Adiabat, so you definitely have elevated cape there, so it's right where that kind of matures. You're getting a little bit of a like what Wes said, the dry slot with the associated instability tongue kind of ripping back west there. So that's, it looks like on the GFS, if you were to have it, it would be right around that area, kind of like, and what Dave was saying, you know, Saturday morning when things look like they go to town there. So you can see pretty well on the soundings. It looks pretty impressive.
I have the theory that Kentori is down here in the Richmond area, and it gets thunder snow and it gets struck by lightning. But that's I could be wrong about that. It's just, it's not really a theory. It's more like a speculation or something or whatever.
I have a question, and it's sort of two parts, but they're related. One, will this be a blizzard? I guess will places get blizzard watches or warnings? I know I haven't looked closely today. I know last night the Euro had up to 50-knot gusts over DC into DC area, which seems unlikely just because we never get 55-60 mile an hour gusts in a snowstorm. But and then I guess related to that, where do you think the biggest coastal impacts might be? I know there's been some discussion about the coastal flooding as well, very high tides and stuff, especially up toward New York City.
Well, I'd be surprised if D.C. did not get blizzard warnings in the whole metro area.
I agree.
I would be surprised. I'd be surprised. You know, I don't know if Richmond's going to get blizzard warnings. We're on the edge, you know, but certainly I think Charlottesville will. I think, you know, maybe Fredericksburg could see some, Roanoke, Lynchburg, the whole valley should see it. So I'd be surprised if there were not. So.
Given the strength of the high of the north, which is, you know, it's not exceptional, but it's strong enough. It's like 10:30, but the low deepens pretty rapidly. You're getting a sub, you know, on some of these solutions, you're getting a sub 990 low already. You know, as it's passing near the Delmarva. So, I mean, like you're going to increase the winds pretty fast when that happens, and you're looking at anywhere. I mean, as long as you stay all snow, and even if you don't stay all snow, as long as you're snow for long enough in the storm, I would be surprised that anywhere that is snow for more than half of the storm doesn't at least have some sort of a blizzard watch or warning.
The GFS from this morning has their gust product. The 10-meter gust has 40 mile an hour wind. I guess they're in knots. 40 knot winds over the bay. In the upper 30s, 38 or so in Calvert County up into towards Baltimore, and then even D.C.'s over 30 for gusts. So
your visibility component is going to be there if it's heavy snow.
So I would just think that the best places are going to be up towards just northeast of Washington. It's got the biggest threat of having blizzard conditions, unless I stay all snow, and then I'd have a good chance to be in blizzard conditions too. And I think I'm going to, but I don't know. I think I could also mix.
Yeah, it's a good high position too. Really enhance that gradient.
Yeah, that's right.
All right. Well, while we're on the air, we're going to try to take some calls. If anybody out there has a question, the number to call in is 646-787-1726. Again, that's 646-787-1726. Hey guys, while we wait for callers, did anybody get a peek at the parallel Euro 12Z? Has that come out yet? Has anybody gotten access to that?
Let me see if it's on Vista.
I don't think it's in.
I don't think it came in. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think it came in today.
So let me have a look. See here.
It wasn't on Storm Vista.
No, it's not there in Vista. It didn't come in today. Let me check. Let me check the Bastardi's Fantasy Love site. Come on, that was funny.
I believe it's not always in. I think. Oh, like twice a day. I think there's, it's kind of sporadic data inflow or something like that into it. I know 0Z is around, but sometimes 12Z isn't. So I was just
people
are supposed to say about it.
12Z. So
Okay.
Randy.
All right, guys. Yep.
Quick comment. One thing I want to mention as we're talking about timing, and that's going to be a huge issue. The GFS is a period of really heavy snow over D.C. Baltimore Metro, kind of mid to late evening on Friday, where the Euro's not even really getting going yet. I mean, if the Euro's right, we're going to be kind of light snow, maybe moderate at times. But the GFS really crushes us during that period. So I think that's going to be a big thing as we get closer, is going to be start time and end time, but especially start time.
is going to be a big issue, because it's if something comes in like a wall around the evening rush, but people are fine, you know, in the morning on Friday, that's going to be a big issue, obviously, getting home. So, and the Euro wouldn't be as big of a deal, but in the GFS, evening rush could be pretty nasty.
Yeah, the GFS will complicate things as far as, you know, governments and schools and all that stuff, because in the morning during rush hour, I won't be doing anything, but, you know, they have to make the decision to send people out, and they may not be able to get back in, but, you know, that's above our pay grade.
Or they make the decision to let them go, and then it doesn't snow till late.
Exactly.
Then everybody thinks the government guys are crazy.
The one other aspect of the storm I want to talk about before we take calls is the duration. Most models aren't progressive or getting out in and out fast. It seems kind of a long duration storm. And I know, Matt, you've been looking at that and really talking about it a lot. I don't know if you want to kick things off with that, but the duration looks to be, I mean, over 24 hours, correct?
Yeah, well, one thing, the Euro has a bias of dragging storms out much longer than they are. So I would be careful about the Euro, and if it's showing some insane 48-hour storm, then it's really going to be 48 hours and not like 36 hours or something along those lines. So be careful with the Euro. It likes to take storms and make them 2 days.
Yeah, I've seen that sometimes too, yes. I've seen that too. By the way, about the terms of the arrival time, if you're looking at the parallel site, if this is from early, this is the 0Z Tuesday parallel site, the mm-hmm. experimental high resolution Euro here, and by 7 p.m. on Thursday, it actually has, you know, in Bristol and in the far southwest of Virginia, it has 2 or 3 inches on the ground, and by 7 a.m. on Friday morning, it has a traced a half inch in Richmond, and it has 1 inch in Lynchburg, and Roanoke has got 4, and like Hillsville in Southwest or Galaxia or down there, they've got Abington, they've got 5 already on the ground by 7 a.m. on the parallel run, and then by 1 o'clock, Richmond has 2, Charlottesville has 2, Roanoke has got 7. You know, and then, Boone and the far northwest, Hickory, North Carolina, where you have 10. Bluefield has 8. I mean, it just rapidly spreads that way. And by 7 o'clock, D.C. has an inch on the ground. And Fredericksburg has 5. Manassas has 3. Charlottesville has 6. Richmond has 5. And just, you know, as you build up as you go further west. So it comes in like a wall pretty fast. I mean, it really does. So I don't know what it means.
And
we'll see if it works out or not, but we'll see. That's what it does. It comes in pretty fast on that.
That was a 0Z parallel Euro, right?
Yeah, that's what it was, yeah. So it's old data anyway, but so.
Okay.
And it comes
all right,
in like
well,
a wall.
Let's, all right, I'm going to take the first call here. 703-864, you are on the air. You have a question? Caller? No? All right. Let's go to the last caller. I've got a 540-550. You're on the air. You have a question?
Yeah, so my question for you is, we're talking about the front end. Now, because this thing's going to be weekend, what does the impact look like it's going to be on the back end? Like, how long is it going to take to clean this up? And how are the temperatures on the back end going to help or hurt the cleanup of all of this?
What area are you in?
I'm in Arlington.
So, essentially,
D.C. And I, full disclosure, I'm a school teacher in Arlington, so, yeah, we're, you know, kind of looking at the back end of this thing, too. And so I'll just hang up and listen to the discussion.
Okay.
Well, the back end is going to be pretty nasty because there's no, like, huge warm-up. Someone else might be able to contribute more to this, but I don't think there's any kind of huge warm-up afterwards, maybe a little bit of a mild-up. So if we do get the gigantic amounts that are possible, cleanup is going to take, with our infrastructure here in D.C., cleanup is going to take a long time. I mean, well into next week.
Of course,
that's if the event unfolds.
It does look like, Will, I mean, the storm's not super cold. I think right after we'll probably be mid-upper 30s, and then it looks like early next week we're into the mid-40s. So,
right. Well, the problems will be with the amount of snow, like, well, I think, will be the morning low temperatures. Like, for example, Sunday morning, where, you know, the Southwest Virginia's in the teens, but D.C. down to Richmond and the Piedmont is generally 27, 28, 29. But then for some reason, on the some of the data is showing the Euros, the GFS has Monday morning, the 25th, a low of 15 in D.C. And with all that snow on the ground, I mean, obviously that's playing an impact here. You know, Richmond's down to 12, Farmville's 12, Charlottesville 13, Roanoke is single digits because of all the snow on the ground. So the next couple of mornings after that will also drop way down during the morning hours because of the snow on the ground. So that's going to cause a problem. Afternoon, like you said, we do warm up in the afternoon. There's no doubt about that. But, you know, above freezing. But the morning low temperatures could be pretty chilly for several mornings afterwards because of all the snow on the ground. So.
Okay.
Right. That could be a problem cleaning it up, you know.
It always takes at least 3 or 4 days probably to clean up in the D.C. area after a big storm like that, I would think, right, Matt? At minimum.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's been you can't really prepare for this type of event. So it doesn't matter what you do. It's you know, as well prepared as the government is, and, you know, I presented this year before the D.C. Council, and they are very well prepared. But there's nothing you can do, really do to prepare for 2 feet in a you know, a heavily populated metro area. So it will clean up. Will take a while, for sure.
Well into
next week. Yeah.
Hey, caller, this is 336-374. You're on the air. Do you have a question?
Yes. Hey, guys, how are you doing?
All right.
Hello?
Hello?
Yep, we're here.
Yes, I just want to – I hadn't heard any of you really speaking of the Southeast. I'm here actually in northern North Carolina in the foothills.
Where in North Carolina?
I'm near Mount Airy, a.k.a. Mayberry.
I know where it is.
Okay, I'm up there, and I know the Euro had a huge hit for here at 12Z.
Yeah.
And most all the guys have got some snow up front and then, you know, going to sleet and freezing rain. You know, the CMC's got a major ice storm reaching all the way down into South Carolina and maybe Northeast Georgia. Would some of you guys elaborate a little bit on the Southeast? Would appreciate that. What do you think about this area?
Dave, that's going to be all you,
yeah,
buddy.
I looked at the 18Z high resolution GFS in Sahel mean actually supports that big snow that the European does. And you know, it's the one that you guys have on the Capital Weather Gang. You have the 18Z GFS up there, and you can see it actually has, like, you know, 12 inches or more in Mount Airy and Greensboro, you know, and Hickory and Winston-Salem, that whole area. So
right.
Now that's maybe, you know, the Europeans doing it, the European ensemble's doing it now, the high-resolution GFS ensemble's doing it, 18Z. You got to believe there's a pretty good shot they're going to see significant snow there.
Right.
You know, but there also could be some ice involved in there as well. And, you know, I don't think the ice – I don't see – the high doesn't seem strong enough, the air mass cold enough to get down to, let's say, Charlotte. But, you know, there. I think there will be some ice involved as well. But, you know, there's a high probability of, you know, 8, 10, 11 inches of snow Greensboro there, I would think. So, it's, you know, it's a
right.
pretty good hit for you guys.
Right, yeah, that would
right.
be a huge hit for us. But what about the CMC? I like the – premium temperatures, you know, it's got cold, you know, ice all the way down in South Carolina and stuff. Yeah. Which model?
Yeah, I'm not sure if
we get
that cold get that far south, but it definitely,
okay.
definitely could. So.
Okay.
All right, caller.
All right, I appreciate
you. All right. Next caller is from 202 DC 270. You're on the air. You have a question? Okay, guess not. All right. Next caller is from Virginia, 703-964. You got a question? Hello? Hey, guess not. I'm done today. All right. Caller 571, you're on the air. You have a question?
Yeah, hey, how you guys doing?
All right.
Hey,
good. Thanks for taking my call. Just wanted to kind of get a summary of everybody's perspectives up to this point with the information that you have. Maybe if you could use the, just looking at the metropolitan area, the three major airports as kind of landmarks, CWI, National, Dulles, surrounding counties, kind of what you think, what might have the biggest impact in and around with what we know now. And I'll hang up and listen to your call. Thanks again, guys.
No problem. Wes, you want to track that or Matt?
Well, I don't know whether we can separate the three. Certainly, I think Dulles has got the biggest chance of really getting crushed, but I think Baltimore also has a good chance. Even D.C. has it. All of them are going to be impacted by tomorrow night and then through Saturday. And not tomorrow night, I should say Friday night into Saturday, tomorrow night.
I think Dulles is in a really good spot. Yeah, sorry, Wes, go ahead.
No, go ahead. You can do it as well as I can.
No. I think Dulles is in a really good spot. I think everyone remembers they got 32 inches out of the February 5th, 2010 storm.
Yeah.
And most of us in the city were like between 20 and 24, maybe 26. So, that's always a really good place, no matter what the models show. Dulles has a chance to really be in a good spot for this one, in my opinion. One caution to the caller and anyone else with the same question is this is such an outlier. Some of these models are spinning out. Even though we've seen it before in these huge historic events, January 96, February 2010, when something's such an outlier, you have to really express caution from this far out. So, there's been a lot of continuity and a lot of consistency in the model. At the same time, you don't want to get ahead of yourself with these gigantic totals. So when you talk about the three airports, the potential's there for huge amounts, but if DTA ends up getting a foot, it wouldn't shock me. I think they'll probably get more based on what we know, but it's hard to really go for gigantic totals and get too specific from this far out.
That's a great point. You just think about it. The system that's going to produce the snow is just getting into the West Coast now. And so it gets sampled pretty well out over the ocean, but it has more complete data when it actually gets over land.
Hey Wes, I wanted to ask you about that. It's kind of a mini, war over that. Is there a big difference when systems come over land and get quote unquote better sampled? Does that make a difference, or are we at the point now with technology where we have satellites and all these new instruments?
Well, I think Daryl argued that it didn't make much difference, but I'm not convinced that's true. I think that when they ran tests and did a flight to try to catch where the system was to get a better idea and drop soundings, that limited area that they got observations from didn't make much difference. But I'm not convinced when you get over where you have essentially a denser network, a system gets all the way into the Rockies and stuff, I think it should, especially the vertical structure ought to be better sampled, because if I understand the way satellites do it, they do it on radiances, and a lot of the way that they used to get soundings was they looked at average slices through the atmosphere instead of where you send a balloon up and you measure what's going on up in the atmosphere. So that's my opinion, and somebody who's smarter than me might know more about it, like Daryl, but I've always been hesitant to until the system gets into the U.S. Plus, that gets you into the time range when the models actually start doing better.
Yeah.
Just because you're getting closer to the time of the storm.
So, Wes, do you think, in other words, that what I was wondering about, obviously we know that rule of thumb where the systems are reaching the West Coast 3 days, and it's also the distance. It just so happens the United States, you know, the size of the United States, North America, it usually takes the system 3 days to cross anyway. So my point is that I would think that the system that we're talking about has now entered the west coast of North America. So I'm wondering if the shift south we saw today in some of the models is somehow connected to the fact that it's now actually being picked up on the west coast of North America.
Well, but it was still offshore of Oregon this morning. I mean, all the models we've seen so far, it was still 500-plus miles offshore.
Yeah, it's
main
just getting in.
So tonight they would catch on more of it. Tonight we'll catch more of it, I would think.
It's onshore. Yeah. It's mostly, it's like just looking at the NAM. I know it's the NAM, but the initialization on the NAM is still going to be pretty decent. The NAM has got a chunk of it onshore, not the whole thing, but it's got at least – it's probably got about half of the shortwave on shore, the front half of it, at 0Z. So tonight will be the first time it samples probably any of it. 12Z will probably have the more complete sample, but I would think tonight, if you see any shift tonight in the whole model suite, that could be because of that. We don't know for sure.
And that's the GFS. I'm just looking at its initial. And that's about the same thing. One of the things that I've always thought was important was the ridge behind it. And that's moving in, and the strength of that ridge has a big play on how much the actual deepening you get to the trough. So,
right.
And that won't be in for another – that won't be until Wednesday, actually, like 18Z Wednesday.
Yeah, there's actually also a pretty strong short wave, at least on the model, showing up, kicking that ridge. So the ridge doesn't stay on the west coast. It keeps on progressing eastward. So the ridge goes into the Rockies, you know, and then you get that short wave, the long wave. Actually, it's probably a long wave, but I guess technically it's a short wave, which is crashing towards the eastern Pacific, the west coast. And, you know, obviously, if we had a bigger ridge on the west coast, the chances of both streams phasing, the northern energy and the southern energy phasing, would be much greater. But because the ridge is being pushed or progressively eastward by the next incoming impulse into the eastern Pacific, I think that prohibits or restricts the ability of the northern jet to drop in and phase with the southern one. So, you know, that ridge is actually quite important. I agree about that. We'll have to see how strong that actually gets. So.
All right, and before we take the next call, I want to remind everybody, we'll be here till 11, so the GFS should be out.
Yes.
The 0Z GFS
it'll be
out in range by this time?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's
through 27 hours already.
Yeah.
Okay. Hey, wait, before we go to a caller, just bouncing off of Matt's thought about the high precip totals. Do you guys believe those numbers, like the widespread 3-inch plus the ones pushing 4+, or is that going to just keep backing down as we get in? I mean, in D.C., a winter storm that pushes 2 inches is pretty much unheard of, one that's all snow. I mean, you're looking at like Knickerbocker in 1922 or the blizzard of 1899. Most other storms that drop a lot of liquid end up, you know, being partly rain, things like that. It just seems weird to see such large totals over such a big area.
Well, I think all the models have, in the long range, have a little bit of a high bias. So I wouldn't be surprised to see them drop off a little bit.
Yeah, I'm wondering if in the future, you know, remember we had those really huge snow totals with the New York blizzard on the European. And I'm wondering if the European, with its better increased resolution, they've been tinkering around with it. I'm wondering if the last couple of years it's had developed a little bias to having too much precipitation in the medium range on some of these systems. I've been looking at that. I'm wondering if that's like one of the fallbacks to it, how they continue to increase the resolution. I'm wondering if it's just getting a tendency to run a little wetter than it normally should. I've seen that with a couple different systems in the European.
Like
where
NAM does, right?
Yeah. I've seen that a couple of systems in the European. I don't know if it's real or not. Maybe I'm just detecting it because I'm only paying attention to certain systems, but I'm wondering. So we'll see. I don't know.
All right. Well, while we wait for the GFS, I don't know if Matt or Ian has any more questions. I'm going to go ahead and take a caller.
Well, I think one, just to revisit duration, because that's kind of a, you know, duration, start time, those are kind of things, you know, that people are interested in. you know, as the weeks come up, we're going to, I mean, sorry, as the days come up, we're going to hear more and more about, you know, what the impact's going to be. Both the GFS and Euro have 36-hour events. And when I say 36 hours, I mean from 36 hours of snow ops, so it could be like 5 miles visibility. But so obviously the duration of really high-impact snow is not going to be 36 hours. But
yeah,
both the GFS and Euro had that duration event. Of course, they start a little bit differently, so one ends later than the other. You know, and I think that's about the length of our events in 96 and 2010, somewhere in that range. I think 96 might have been over 40 hours, but if so, just barely. What do you all think about the duration? Is that realistic? Is it going to be quicker?
Hello.
Anyone?
Hello. I was going to say, with that upper level low, it's certainly realistic.
Wasn't 96, storm in 96 was about that long, I think.
I think it was like 42 hours, but that's off the top of my head. Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably right.
And that's the most similar looking. It's the most similar looking upper low is 96. So if you get the low, you hear people talking in the threads about quote the low getting captured, and that just essentially means that the upper level low and surface low are now becoming almost
stacked
together.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when that happens, it's not going to move. You usually get a stall for about at least 12 hours usually, or somewhere in there. And that adds on to a typical storm that might have been a long duration 24-hour storm can turn into a 36 or 40-hour storm when you get a big upper level low capturing it like that. So that's why you have to watch that with upper level low of that magnitude and that strength, that the rate of deepening that it's able to capture the surface low. Then you have to really consider that you could get a 36-hour event. It's not guaranteed. I mean, the whole thing could get captured a little further out. We don't know yet. But it's definitely a possibility.
Well,
if it helps at all,
almost every single day in my own head there's a 36-hour snowstorm going on. Man, I'm not.
That might be most of us. All right, I think we have a call on the line, 703-777. Are you there?
Yeah, I am. Just had a question for you. I lived in southwestern Ohio during the blizzard of 78. And we saw the barometric pressure, I think, bottomed out around 28, 2 or 3. And I think it's like within 24 hours, the storm fully intensified. It dropped like 40 millibars in the last 24 hours. You guys see anything that would indicate that we'll get a storm of that intensity?
I don't. In terms of barometric pressure, I doubt if it'll get that low.
How low? What was the how
it was? The barometric pressure, as I recall, it was like 28.2 or 3, and I know the thing that kind of shocked everybody. It dropped like 40 millibars in the last 24 hours.
Which storm is this?
That was the Blizzard 78.
Oh yeah.
The Ohio one, exactly.
The
Cleveland
Superbomb. Yeah, baby. Yeah. I was in that, actually.
Yeah, so was I. I mean, it was a dangerous storm.
Well, where were you, Wes?
I was actually in the around the Dayton, Ohio area at the time.
Wow. Wes, where were you?
I was here.
Okay. Well, the 78, when I was in Chicago, I was in the Navy. So, I remember watching John Coleman on the air. And talking about it, and they closed the naval base down. We had 16 inches, and they said they told everybody strict instructions: only walk where the roads been plowed. So me, being the professional idiot that I am, I decided to cut across the baseball field near the lake. And you know, it's like there's about 10 feet of snow on the ground. I mean, 10 inches of snow on the ground. It's like 12 degrees outside, and the wind is coming straight off of Lake Michigan at like 50 miles an hour. And I took a blast in the face of knocking into a drift, and, you know, suddenly the snow started feeling really warm and comfortable. So I said to myself, you know, that's not a good sign. So, but that was a very interesting storm for me. So,
all right, Carl.
Anyway, just for reference, that storm, I think, I want to say that storm dropped to 952 millibars near Cleveland.
It did, 951, yes.
Yeah,
this isn't going to get anywhere near that.
Yeah, this one might not even drop below 980. I mean, it's probably 980s. It might get down to it by the time it's a little moving off to the northeast of the Delmarva.
So this will be a good 30, at least 30 millibars higher in terms of actual pressure. And I don't think the rate of deepening is going to match that. That's one of the most extreme. No. That's one of the most extreme rates of deepening we've seen.
All right, guys, I'm going to take one more caller. Meanwhile, check the GFS. I don't know where we are on it. Just have it up.
We're
after this call.
51 hours and the low's in Mississippi, northern Mississippi.
Further south. Huh, just
54 hours, it's northern Mississippi.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Caller, this is caller 703-777. Did I just have you on? Did I just have this guy on? Okay, this is 828-201. You're on the air.
Can you hear me?
Hung up, sorry.
Yep.
Took too long, buddy. All right, 703-973, you're on the air.
Yes, gentlemen, good evening. Thank you first for putting this on and for all of your service to the forum over the years. I also grew up just north of Dayton, Ohio, and was in high school in 78. Very vivid memory I'll never forget. Two questions, if I could, please. One, you mentioned a little bit about the sea surface temperatures off the coast and down in the Gulf. Given that that's where a lot of the moisture is going to come from, do the models compensate for the outrageous temperatures we're seeing out there right now? And does that potentially represent a bit of an anomaly that could mix in with some other than white liquid precipitation? And the other one is a little more about the winds, if you guys could, about when do you think the winds will pick up and about the duration and intensity. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you. Anybody?
I'm still here. Go ahead.
Yeah. Anybody? Don't all jump in once at it now.
Well, the models have sea surface temperatures in them. So they know about the sea surface temperatures. So they should have an idea of what they're dealing with. So I don't think that's a tremendous issue to the models. They've got the physics, and they'll take into account the temperatures.
I don't think it's going to really take it matter too much in terms of how much QPS someone's going to get. You know, it's not going to take a storm that maybe, you know, could have been 2 inches, and all of a sudden now you're getting 3.5-4 inches just because the waters are a couple degrees warmer off the.
Yeah, I mean there'll be more moisture available. Some, but in terms of the models ought to be able to know that the moisture is there, and
right,
that
you should take
it got warm.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be a stunning surprise.
Right. Yeah.
I would not
Thank
think.
You.
All right, no problem.
What about the winds?
Where are we at?
Oh yeah, the winds.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Well,
the wind,
from what I can see, I mean. As the primary low or the southern low begins to, you know, come up from the Tennessee Valley, obviously you'll see some pressure gradient increase. But the winds, I think, will really start kicking like for the pre-dawn hours of Saturday and continue through like noon or 2 or 4 o'clock Saturday afternoon. That's when the real wind's going to be. It's from what I can see from all the data.
Yeah, I think that's right.
So.
All right.
Sounds good. Thank you very much.
All right, guys.
No problem.
Hey, Randy, the GFS is out to 63 hours. We should probably start to talk about that because it's just getting there.
Okay, yeah. Go for it. Somebody pick it up. Run with it.
Well, it's slower to get. I think it's slower to get. At 15Z, it still doesn't have the snow into D.C. yet.
No, it's slower, and it might even be south. I'm trying to.
Anyone else have some input on
that? The low looks like it's northern Alabama or right on the Alabama, almost Tennessee border.
Yep. That's what it looks like to me. It definitely looks, you know, before you have time to drive that thing into Kentucky, which, you know, and now it's not doing that. It's definitely at 60 hours. It's got it over Huntsville, it looks like.
Yeah, and then it goes a little bit north, but that ought to be about as far as it gets.
Yeah.
May have a spike. 66 hours, there may be something in Tennessee, but there's already something forming down in Georgia, it looks like. It's starting to have the pressures fall down there.
Yeah, at 60 hours, the 0850 line is on the Virginia-North Carolina border, and once you get to Danville, it drops almost drops all the way down to Asheville. And then by 66 hours, Well, there goes the rain forecast for Richmond. That's not going to work out. The zero line is still on the Virginia-North Carolina border. The heavy precip by 1 o'clock is in, the dark green on Vista. It's up by Manassas and up by Harrisonburg and east of Richmond. And, it's snowing like hell in North Carolina, northwest.
Yeah, at 1 p.m., Matt, I don't know if you're looking at 66 west. You're probably further along than that, but at 1 p.m., it's right on our door, right on the doorstep, D.C. at 1 p.m.
It looks like a noon start time or so for D.C.
Wow. At 69 hours, which is 21Z, that's a 4 o'clock in the afternoon, 5?
Yeah.
The zero line is still at Emporia. Holy crap.
Yeah.
It's cold.
It's cold. We've already got a quarter of an inch of liquid across D.C., and then Virginia, parts of them are already over a half inch.
Yeah, it's snowing like a son of a bitch in Richmond, if this is right. Good googly moogly, Batman.
How does this compare to the 18Z run as far as positioning goes?
It's colder as far as positioning.
I think
it's a little
south. I don't think an awful lot.
Yeah.
Right. It's just that the overall air mass is just colder, is what it is. So.
You got a nice wall of precip on the end up into D.C. between 21 and 0Z. That's a pretty good sump coming into the city.
Yeah, by 0Z, we got a half inch over us, and the zero line still way, way south.
I mean, it's like it's by Williamsburg, for Pete's sake.
Yeah.
I mean, it goes from the zero line goes from Wallops Island to Williamsburg to just north of Emporia. I mean, this is a Wolfosaurus Rex. I don't know what to tell you.
Go ahead, Matt.
This is not just a big dog. This is a Wolfosaurus Rex. It's such an animal, but I just made one up.
What about
500 low is definitely a bit slower. It's hanging back in probably about 6 hours slower than earlier. I don't think it matters much.
At 75 hours, the actual low appears to be centered over downtown Wilmington, North Carolina, or Maple Myrtle Beach. I mean, that's pretty far south.
Yeah, that's farther south than at HEZ. Maybe by a little bit.
Yeah, maybe a teeny bit. That's 3Z, which is what, 10 o'clock Friday night? So 10 o'clock Friday night, Richmond's mixing, finally. Our temperature is 32, our 850 is like 0.5. So, break out the sun.
Well, you guys are further than I am. I'm only at 75. So.
Yeah, 48 hours. DC's got a half inch. The zero line at 850 is still down near just south of Patuxent, and it looks like it's still even south of Fredericksburg.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And
the
surface temperature is low freezing down to southern Calvert County.
What hour is this?
That's 78 hours. So that's like 1 a.m., Saturday morning.
Okay. What were you saying, Ian?
It just looks like there's a nice big batch coming up at 6Z. I bet the 12Z panel hammers DC. It looks like it's coming right up the bay toward us.
All right, so now I've got it to 81 hours, which is 4 a.m. At 78 hours, which is 1 a.m. Saturday, Richmond, like I said, the zero line is right over Richmond. I might be at plus 5 or plus 1, because I'm a little southeast of it. But west of Richmond, it's all snow. I mean, the Piedmont is getting just slammed. The temperature is still 32 degrees here. And then by 9Z, which is 81 hours, the line is moving back to Richmond again. So, and it hasn't moved at all. I mean, at that point, the low is almost over Hatteras west. So, at that point, the wind's turned north. And whatever warming there is, that's over at 850. I mean, that's...
Yeah, well, I'm about... Looks like minus 1 or 2 at 850 where I live, and then D.C. may be a little bit colder than that. But I've got, like, at my house, they've got a 70, 0.75, and that's 0.75 almost gets up to DC at 9Z. And by 84 hours, nothing moves northward at all, pretty much. And it's still snowing pretty heavy at DC.
Yep.
This is gonna be a great.
Yeah, just wait for the pivot. It's coming.
That's right. Don't be a pivot.
The pivot's coming.
Yeah,
so the
GFS is a mauling, basically.
Well, it's another mauling.
Yeah, we got to wait for the pivot, but it's a mauling. It's an absolute mauling. Yeah.
The low is about 990 millibars, and it's just to the northeast of Nags Head, North Carolina, from what I can see. So, like we talked about, it's passing north of Hatteras, but southeast of Norfolk, which is a great track for DC, Baltimore, Philly, even into pretty good track for New York City. And that's a marginal. It's a good track. It's not great for Richmond. It's good. It's a very good track for Charlottesville. But, you know, Richmond is right on the edge there, and you can see that because we're right on the edge between the sleet and the snow. So.
Up, and then. And then
here comes the deform.
Yep. Yeah. 87 hours, the deformation zone starting to form. And, of course, the H50 temperatures don't go anywhere. The surface temperatures, because it's daylight, have gotten a little bit warmer, but they'll probably start cooling back off, I would imagine, as the low pulls out to the east.
This is the difference between the GFS and the European. By 87 hours out, I mean, you can see the low is now almost like east of Norfolk, and that's just a little further north than what the European's been doing in the GFS ensemble. So I'm not sure if it's going to be that far north, but maybe it will be. I don't know. We'll see if the other models do that.
The good news is it's not the NAM. It has a solution.
Yeah,
way
really.
Different.
Yeah,
let's talk about the surface for a minute. I think February 2010 was probably one of our warmer, like, gigantic storms. You know, at least started out warm. And then I think during the height, it was probably like mid-20s. Maybe 24, 25 at DCA, DC. Do you think we're going to get that cold, or is it really going to hover in the upper 20s for a lot of the storm, around 30? It seems to me like the temperatures are a little too warm on these models, and then we're actually going to be more in the 24 to 25 range.
Well, at 18Z, the GFS actually gets DC. It actually does move everything. It's surprising to me that it actually moves the 850 line, zero line, right up to me, and it has DC 32 degrees.
DC looks safe on the SKU-Ts, though. It gets close to 90 hours.
I'm looking at the SKU-T, and it looks safe.
It looks like it's all snow at DC.
And then 92 hours, things start to...
The suburbs get crushed by the...
It's biblical for Northwest Virginia.
Wow, that's a huge cloud.
The low is now at the 93 hours. The low is actually over Wild Island, so it's actually you can see it's actually turned a little bit, and the zero line is actually pushed. It's pushing up towards Philly, and it just reaches it's Patuxent River, and Annapolis, but now it's collapsed. It's gone east of Norfolk. So Norfolk apparently has gone over to snow. Richmond's gone back over to snow by Saturday. 4 p.m., between 1 and 4 p.m., and that heavy snow, which is over D.C. and the Piedmont and Culpeper, that's wrapping around down towards Richmond and Norfolk. So.
All right, hey, guys. Sorry to cut you off, but I only got this time to 11. We got to wrap it up. We got 90 seconds left. Thank you guys very much for coming. In summary, it looks like GFS is a nice hit. Let's see if the Euro tonight follows suit.
And the ensembles,
And ensembles too, and summarize the West. Like West said, better stamps may help. You guys said the most of the short wave is on land, or a half of it sampled.
About half of it's in.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know if that we'll see if that hurts or help. Like I said, thanks West, thanks Will, Matt, Ian, Scott, Dave. Thank you guys.
Sure.
Dude,
thank you. Good luck.
96 on the GFS.
All right, guys.
I'd be in New York City in that area.
Maybe we'll do another radio show.
All right, good night, everyone.
Goodbye.
All right, bud.
All right.
See y'all.
Good night, guys. Bye. Thanks for joining us. Bye.